on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is Invest Talk. Independent thinking, shared success. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Portfolio Manager, Luke Guerrero.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to InvestTalk. I'm Luke Guerrero, and I will be your host on this day's show. Today is Thursday, August 7th, 2025. And not to shock you, but the Labor Day holiday, that is less than 4 weeks away. Fewer than 4 weeks left until Labor Day weekend. And that is to say that summer is moving pretty darn quickly. It's almost over. Now, some of us, certainly the youngest among us, get this little summer respite, right? Summer vacation. A time away from learning, time away from education. But for us adults, we don't really have that ability. We consistently have to be paying attention to all that is around us and educating ourselves, not just for our work lives, our professional lives, but also what is happening in the economy that affects our investments, that affects our financial future. And so we here at InvestTalk hope that we teach lessons 5 days a week, all year round. Winter, spring, summer, fall, doesn't matter. We do that by bringing you educational items, actionable items, and you help us by bringing us your finance and investment questions. So before we run down today's market performance and talk about those show topics I brought to the table, let's tackle this caller question now.
Hey guys, this is Art from Tucson calling in about General Dynamics Company, GD, and they're an aerospace defense company, which unfortunately I have a high demand for their products in these times. I have a small position and I'm wondering where I might want to pick up more, if at all, like your opinion on the company, where you see it going, and a good price point, if you could determine one. Thank you, and I'll listen on the podcast.
General Dynamics Corp is a global aerospace defense company, and certainly as tensions have been rising around the globe, so too have the growth projections of some of these aerospace defense names. Sales growth about 3.9% on an annualized basis, but picked up quite a bit this year. My quick math tells me that's about eight to 10% growth in revenue year over year from 2024 into 2025. Certainly more in both nominal and relative terms than we saw from 2023 into 2024. They recently reported earnings on July 23rd, a pretty strong Q2 earnings beat. 374 was the adjusted EPS, beating the estimate of 353. They also had some momentum within their marine systems unit. Revenue surged 22% year over year. And in mid-June, you started to see the price adjust and see a little bit of a technical breakout ahead of an earnings report, which kind of gave some confirmation on the chart as well. Now, from a profitability perspective, margins have been relatively stable. This is a pretty established company, $86 billion market cap company. And so net margins have floated from anywhere between about 7.8% over the past 5 years to about 8.9% was the high in 2019. Yet notably, margins have been increasing, albeit steadily, over the past 3 years. Now, with this uptick in growth, with this increase in margins, with free cash flow starting to build more and more, and with a clean balance sheet, right? They only got $8.8 billion in long-term debt, you can see right here. How does it look from a relative valuation perspective? Well, forward-looking price to earnings, about 19.4 times. Price to book value, 3.6 times. Price to cash flow, 17 times. All in all, thematically, it fits the rising tensions globally, and it does so in a not too expensive way. So General Dynamics, especially off of pretty solid earnings in July, on the back of some technical strength, going to give a thumbs up. That is General Dynamics, ticker GD. We got a lot of ground to cover in the next 45 minutes or so, and here's a little bit of what we have planned for you all. My main focus point concerns this topic. Can millennials ever catch up to boomer wealth? Thanks to historic economic advantages, baby boomers still control over half of U.S. wealth, but millennials are rapidly closing the gap through higher earnings, rising home equity, and smart investing. Also, we have a couple interesting stories, including one that will be relevant for those of you who own gold, because given its run-up, its hot streak, what do you need to know before you sell out of your position and the tax man comes a-calling? Also, we'll touch on how a new school of thought wants to focus more on fear than risk in investing. Should we have time at the end of the show, we'll touch on the end of the de minimis exemption, what it means for e-commerce sellers, what it means for consumers. We also have some voice bank questions ready to play, including one on dividend reinvestment and one on ConocoPhillips. And as always, some questions from the comment section of the Invest Talk YouTube channel. And of course, I welcome and hope for your finance and investment questions now or anytime throughout the show. Now we're going into a quick break. Please remember you can call anytime and leave your questions on the Invest Talk voice bank, or if you're listening via live stream or an AM 1220 in the Bay Area, call now at 888-99-CHART. Up next, I will comment on today's market activity.
Serious investors are certain to have finance and investment questions.
Wanted to get your take on W.W. Granger.
And the best person to ask your question in the right way is you.
And I was wondering, from your standpoint, is there a downside in buying fractional shares versus whole shares?
And 24/7, rain or shine, Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero stand ready to provide their unbiased answers.
The issue, though, is really over the last decade or so, it's never maintained this level of profitability for a long period of time.
Commodities are incredibly volatile, so when the going is good, take some profit.
Your participation makes InvestTalk better.
My name is Mike. I'm calling in from Orange County, California.
And this is Lewis calling from Bolivia.
Let's go talk to Chris in Maine.
So don't forget to call Invest Talk.
First off, great show. I learned a lot from you too.
888-99-CHART.
You know what doesn't belong in your epic summer plans? Getting burned by your old wireless bill. While you're planning beach trips, barbecues, and three-day weekends, your wireless bill should be the last thing holding you back. Maybe you should make the switch to Mint Mobile. With Mint, you can get the coverage and speed you're used to, but for way less money. And, for a limited time, Mint Mobile is offering 3 months of unlimited premium wireless service for $15 a month. So, while your friends are sweating over data overages and surprise charges, you'll be chilling, literally and financially. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text, delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. Use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number along with all your existing contacts. I like Mint Mobile, and I think you will too. This year, skip breaking a sweat and breaking the bank. Get this new customer offer and your 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month at mintmobile.com/investtalk. That's mintmobile.com/investtalk. Upfront payment of $45 required. Equivalent to $15 a month. Limited time new customer offer for first 3 months only. Speeds may slow above 35 gigabytes on unlimited plans. Taxes and fees extra. See Mint Mobile for details.
InvestTalk. Your questions are free. The answers are unbiased. Luke Guerrero is here now. 888-99-CHART.
888-99-CHART is the number if you want to get through live to ask me your finance and investment question today. Before you do call, let's get into the market update, market wrap-up. U.S. stocks mostly lower in trading. The S&P 500 down 8 basis points. NASDAQ, though, up 35 on the back of some solid Apple performance. Dow down 51 after the implementation of tariffs. Russell 2000 small cap down about 29 basis points. In spite of the negativity you saw today, though, stocks still on pace for solid weekly gains. Software, chemicals, healthcare services, pharma, some of the worst performers of the day. Big tech mostly higher, again, with Apple adding on to yesterday's 5% rally. Outperformers included semis, home builders, copper names, HPCs, medtech, food, and beverages. Treasuries on the bond side, a bit weaker. You saw some curve flattening on the back of really a disappointing treasury auction on the day, demand not being what the government wanted. Dollar index little changed, however, with gold finishing up 60 basis points and crude oil settling down 70. Guess what? That's six straight days of declines, that is. A lot of moving pieces overall. You know, market's starting to not really be able to sustain much of the earlier momentum from what we saw when the president announced the tariff implementation, and that is some carve-outs. Really not enough to stimulate investor interest. You're seeing a bit of a pullback, some outflows, the Fed, another area of focus. You did see some recent dovish shift in Fed speak, as well as a report that Waller, who notably was one of the two dissents from the decision in July, now the leading candidate to replace Jerome Powell. On the economic data front, it's like weekly initial jobless claims printed at 226,000 above the prior week's upwardly revised 219,000, also above the consensus. Continuing claims registered 1.974 million versus 1.95, which was the consensus, another new highest level since November of 2021. We also got the first read of Q2 productivity, showed a 2.4% quarter-over-quarter increase, a little bit better than the 2% that was expected, and Q1's 1.5% decline. Unit labor costs, because we're all very concerned about inflation, up 1.6% quarter-over-quarter against 1.3, so a bit hotter than consensus. Also, New York Fed's survey of consumer expectations. That's where people are asked what they think about inflation. Well, the one-year inflation expectation, up a bit, up 10 basis points to 3.1%, while the five-year is up 30 basis points to 2.9%. Looking ahead to next week, focus will be on the CPI number on Tuesday for July. Goods prices, the key area of scrutiny amid expectations for tariffs to really start having a more meaningful impact in the months to come. We'll also get PPI producer prices on Thursday, while retail sales for July and preliminary University of Michigan sentiment for August cap off the week on Friday. Right, let's go to Roger. He's calling in from the Bay Area, who has a question about 401ks. How can I help you, Roger?
Hi, Luke. Thanks for taking my call. My question is regarding the Trump signing an executive order today to make it easier for the 401k plans to offer private equity investing. Wanted to know what's your take on that. And on the same lines, I was, in fact, thinking for long and looking to add a holding in the private equity space, and was looking at either Blackstone or Apollo Global Management. Any take on either of these two, and what would be a better choice? And what price should I get in? Because I feel currently they are overvalued.
Yeah, well, you know, I'll talk about the first question, not to spend too much time, on all of these. But I think the more important part of your question was about the executive order for 401ks, which is supposed to give more exposure to alternative assets, make it so you can get more exposure to alternative assets within 401k plans. The reason why that wasn't the case before is, well, there's a lot of interesting liability between the employer and the employee when the employer offers certain funds, right? Employers can be sued for not offering funds that are, let's say, suitable for retirement purposes. And so because of that, there was a narrow definition of what could be within 401k plans. So this order enables retirement plans to include alternative assets such as private equity, real estate, cryptocurrencies, commodity infrastructure funds, and digital strategies alongside those traditional stock and bond funds. Now, it matters because it may offer potential for higher returns and diversification, though access to such investments will take time to materialize. This isn't a thing that happens overnight, right? ERISA, which is what governs essentially retirement plans, the Employee Retirement Income Security Act, is very specific in its mandate. And so changing what has historically been allowed is going to take some time. One other thing I want to mention, because I think it's important as well. I saw a study the other day about private equity returns versus public equity returns, I think over the past 15 years. And one of the reasons why private equity returns tend to seem so good is because smoothing, right? Private equity investments, private investments are not mark-to-market daily. What does mark-to-market mean? Well, the fair value assessment does not happen daily. That does happen with public investments. That's what trading does, right? You have a buyer, you have a seller, they meet at a price, that's a transaction, and that is a fair value for that asset at any given point in time. You don't get that with private equity. And so what you tend to see is when there are periods of volatility within public markets, it doesn't really bleed over into private markets. And so it makes returns look smoother and better from a risk-adjusted basis, because you get the long-term return without necessarily the interim volatility, because of the difficulty of finding out, how to measure these things that are private investments. And so I think what I'm trying to get at here is, just because you have access to certain things doesn't mean that adding new types of investments will diversify your portfolio. Yes, it is the case sometimes that correlations can differ from private and public markets, but you have to ask yourself why that is. Is it because the private assets have different risks, or is it because the returns of those private and public assets are measured differently? Hopefully that answers some of your questions. Certainly this is an important topic, and anybody who is looking to move away from some of those stocks and bonds traditionally in 401ks to what will now soon be available to them needs to do their due diligence and do their research. Thanks for the call. Moving into a quick break, still to come, my focus point, more answers to your questions. I encourage you to be just like Roger and give me a call at 888-99-CHART.
Have you heard about the new InvestTalk store? That's right, you'll find great merch for the savvy investor. It's all there for you now at InvestTalkStore.com. Luke Guerrero is here now, taking your finance and investment questions live. Call InvestTalk 888-99-CHART.
My main focus point today concerns an important topic. Can millennials ever catch up to boomer wealth? Now, baby boomers hold about 53.2% of U.S. wealth. How much do millennials hold? Well, about 4.6%. So why the stark difference? Well, one is obviously because of the amount of time one has had to accumulate assets. But the baby boomer generation had historic economic advantages. They had lower past costs, they had pensions, they had strong single income households, the ability to have the American dream with just one parent working. Compare that to millennials. Well, millennials have massive student debt as educational costs have increased dramatically, wage stagnation, and multiple recessions at key career stages. And that has helped to really limit early wealth building. Higher modern salaries can help millennials catch up, especially as they enter their peak earning years. You know, it wasn't always easy for the boomers either, right? They endured high inflation in the 1970s, showing that every generation has economic headwinds. No generation has an easy path. And so what are the two most critical things for not just millennials, but anybody who is trying to save? Being consistent and investing it over time. You can't help inflation, right? Inflation is a necessary evil of a growing economy. But what you can do is you can focus on avoiding lifestyle inflation as your income rises. If you get that raise, it doesn't mean you need to add another bedroom to your apartment. It doesn't mean that you need to upgrade that car that works perfectly fine. External costs can't be controlled, but the cost that you choose to incur can. Budgeting with wealth creation in mind means trying your best to get to that 20% of income as a minimum to savings, investing, and capping fixed expenses at 50 to 55%. You have to remember that you are rewarded for this consistency, compounded interest, rewards, just doing it early versus doing it perfectly. Early and automated contributions are a key part of what can help you achieve your financial goals. Now, for a lot of people, right, the ease of access of the internet has opened up a new pathway for making money. Side hustles, let's call it. And these can add income stability. They can accelerate wealth growth. And they can help provide more control and more resilience. You don't necessarily know which way the economic winds are moving, not just from a high level, but within your specific company, within your specific sector, your specific community. And so having alternate sources of income, should you have the opportunity to grow that business, can be critical in helping give you a leg ahead and helping you save for the future. While you're investing, you want to do it with a strategic mindset. A strategic mindset. Track your net worth. Set your goals. Focus on owning your time, not just money. You have to remember that this is a balanced approach. All things in life work better when they are balanced. For people with complex financial situations, it really doesn't make sense for them to do it all on their own. It may not make sense for some of you listening to do it all on your own. The point of having professional help isn't just because they have more expertise and can help with your specific situation and your goals. It's also so that you can spend the time doing the things you would rather do. Traveling, hanging out with your children, watching your grandchildren. It is hard, very hard, to break bad habits in anything. Bad eating habits, bad working out habits, bad gym habits, bad exercise habits, bad cleanliness habits. And so is also the case with bad financial habits. So small, steady, disciplined financial decisions beat occasional big efforts 9 times out of 10. Momentum is the most valuable and most important asset for your investing life. And keeping your life in tune with what your financial goals are can help you achieve them in a balanced way. Alrighty, on the next Invest Talk, we will look into this story. Only 36% of Americans are confident about Social Security's future. So how worried should you be? You've been paying into it your entire life. Is the trust fund going to be available to you when you most need it? Amid various concerns, a recent AARP survey has revealed that just 36% of Americans are confident in Social Security's future, a 7-point drop since 2020. Obviously, for those of you who are nearing retirement, those of you who are in retirement, or people like myself who have a way to go, this really is a relevant topic for all of us. That's tomorrow. But for now, I'm Luke Guerrero, ready to take your calls, answer your questions, and hear what is on your mind. So pick up that phone and dial that number, 888-99-CHART.
Rolls on, and you've got finance and investment questions for Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero. Call InvestTalk 888-99-CHART.
Hi, this is John from Florida. I appreciate you guys' show. You guys are wonderful. Just calling about COP, Charlie Oscar Papa. Just wondering what you guys thought about it over the next year, 5 years. And I was wondering what you guys think is a good price to pick it up at. Right now, it's less than 3% of my portfolio. Looking to kind of work my way up to that 3% mark, trying to figure out what a good price you guys think would be to pick some more up at. And thank you and enjoy the show. I look forward to hearing the answer on the podcast.
ConocoPhillips, ticker COP, is an exploration and production company that focuses on the production, exploration, and transport of crude oil and natural gas. It operates in Canada, Europe, the Middle East, and North Africa for the most part. Geographically, about 79% of its revenue comes to the United States, with a little bit elsewhere, about 6% from Canada, another 4% from Norway. Now, over the past year, it has performed pretty poorly, down about 13.4%. But really, a lot of that, especially that year-to-date underperformance of the market, is indicative of the industry as a whole. In 2025, it's outperforming the industry by about 0.7%. And so, as always, for energy companies, your stock price is going to be tied to the commodity that you are selling. That's why in 2022, they brought in $78 billion in revenue, and it started to trickle off a bit in 2023 and 2024 when, surprise, surprise, performance wasn't great. And so this is essentially an easy correlation to understand here. And that is why, as oil has struggled, you've seen margins compress a bit, down from 23.7 in 2022, projected to be about 13.2% this year. But you're starting to see growth pick up in spite of what oil has been doing. Revenue up from $54 billion to about $61 billion. And because of what has been happening within the market broadly, this name's trading about 13.9 times forward-looking earnings, 1.8 times price to book value. Now, Q2 earnings, they beat about 19% year-over-year drop, given in those lower crude prices. But instead, or rather, in spite of that, COP delivered 1.42 in adjusted EPS versus the analyst estimate of 1.38. And that's because they've had a pretty aggressive sale and divestiture of some of their, let's say, less than outperforming assets. And they've really retooled the business in a way. Full disclosure, we own, COP for some of our clients. We think it's a good company. Understand the dynamics that are really going to push energy companies just broadly is going to be what's happening with the underlying product's price out in the market. But for those who are long-term oriented investors, picking up some of these energy names that have been underperforming at these prices where they are now can be a good move for the long run. Thanks for the call. Right, let's keep things moving and answer a question from the comment section of the Invest Talk YouTube channel. I hope by now you've checked out our YouTube, that's Invest Talk with two T's. We offer unique content there, explanations on things that happen in the market as they happen. Just the other day, we posted a video about what was going on after the Fed's decision, explanations, common questions from clients. Either way, head over to the Invest Talk YouTube. You get more than just what you're getting with this podcast. And while you're over there, if you want to leave a question, like Haley_RS did, we will get to that on the show. This question is about CVS. It says, "Hi, InvestTalk. I'm 32 and currently hold CVS in my portfolio. It, along with AbbVie, ticker ABBV, are my only exposure to the healthcare sector. I'm wondering if CVS is a solid long-term hold or I might be better off selling and reallocating to potentially stronger healthcare opportunities. I'd love to hear your thoughts." CVS Health Corp, it's a health solutions company, so they have stores, pharmacies, healthcare benefits, health services, and consumer wellness and corporate services as well. Geographically, they operate primarily, if not wholly, in the United States. 42.5% comes from their health services. 22.4% comes from pharmacy and consumer goods. About 35% comes from their healthcare benefits. Now, the stock has been struggling on a relative performance basis since about 2022. But year to date, it's up 41.64%. And that's primarily because some really strong earnings, right? Q2 2025, you had a big beat. Adjusted EPS 1.81, comfortably beating the consensus of 1.46. Revenue growth, 8.4% up year over year. You had earnings upgrades and upgrades of guidance. EPS forecast has been upgraded to $6.30, or even as high as $6.40. And all this is really a big rebound on the back of a fresh leadership team. which has caused a 39% surge. 39% in health insurance income, about 4% increase in prescriptions filled. And so it can be the story of what happens when you have a strategic realignment, right? They're streamlining their business. They closed about 900 stores. They exited the ACA markets. They discontinued some of their services that were underperforming. And they introduced new initiatives like Cost Vantage, pricing signaling, a shift more towards those efficient operations and services like Health Hub. So overall, I think CVS is a solid performer, certainly over this year, and a good turnaround story. Now, is it too expensive? No. It's trading about 9.4 times forward-looking earnings. Now, compare that to AbbVie, right? Pharmaceutical company. A little bit more expensive, but gives you that diversity, right? So within your allocation, you have CVS, which I do think is a solid long-term hold, and AbbVie, which is a pharmaceutical name. Now, pharmaceutical names have been struggling a bit, but AbbVie really hasn't. And so either way, I think these are two solid names because CVS in and of itself offers broad diversity. Coupling that with a pharmaceutical name that is a strong performer seems to be a good way to go. Thanks for the call, or rather, thanks for the comment. All right, let's talk gold. For those of you who are fortunate enough to allocate towards gold over the past 2 years, you've seen a pretty historic run-up in pricing. But when there's a historic run-up in pricing, what does that mean? Well, that means you are also going to probably owe the tax man if you decide to sell. So let's talk about some of the ways that you may have been invested in gold and what that might mean for you from a tax perspective. So you could own gold physically, you could own physical gold. You could own a gold ETF, you could own gold futures, and they're all may be treated a little bit differently from a tax perspective. Physical gold is taxed as a collectible, meaning long-term capital gains can be taxed up to 28% rather than the standard 20% cap for stocks and mutual funds. What about ETFs? Well, ETFs backed by physical metal, like GLD, are also treated as collectibles, subject to the same 28% maximum long-term capital gain rate. Gold future ETFs, they're taxed a little bit differently. They use a mark-to-market reporting, meaning you're already taxed annually on gains even if you did not sell the ETF. Now, if you sell within a year, any gains are taxed as ordinary income, just like any other short-term stock sales. 1099 tax forms may be issued when selling gold coins or bars, but you are still legally required to report gains or losses on your return in spite of the fact that they may not be issued. One of the most difficult parts, if you are an owner of physical gold, is probably getting your cost basis. You need original purchase receipts to determine gains. If the gold is a gift, the donor's cost basis usually transfers to you. Capital gains tax applies even if gold was inherited, but in that case, your cost basis is typically the fair market value on the date of inheritance, what we call a step up in cost basis. Now, if you are the type of person that wants physical gold and wants to sell physical gold, well, dealers may not help you with tax reporting, so investors must track premiums, discounts paid at purchase and sale to determine true loss and gain. And it's not just federal taxes. State taxes may also apply depending on where you live, further increasing the potential tax burden on your gold sale. Gold equities, mining stocks, mutual funds, well, they enjoy standard capital gains treatment up to 20% for long-term holdings, making them more tax efficient than physical gold for many investors. And so I think this is really the heart of it, is understanding that there are a million ways to get exposure to an asset. In this case, there are several different ways that you can hold gold. And each of them are going to have their different costs, their different benefits. Each of them are going to have different liquidity, different volatility. Each of them is going to have different tax treatment. Understanding what makes the most sense for you is critical to getting the most out of your gold investment. All righty, let's keep things rolling and answer another caller question now.
Hello, InvestTalk. My name is Enrique calling from Pacific Beach. My question is it better to reinvest the dividends back into the stock or to get them deposited into your core account, even though if you're going to keep investing $500 to $1,000 a month. Just want to hear your take on it. Looking forward to the answer on the podcast. Thank you very much.
So the question is around, it sounds like DRIPs, dividend reinvestment plans. And so the idea is, when a dividend is paid out by a company, you may be offered cash or you may be offered to elect to reinvest those dividends directly. Now, there are some costs and benefits here. There are some things that you have to understand. One of them is, well, it is best if you want long-term compounding and you intend to buy the same company to just have the dividends reinvested. Right, there is a settlement time between when cash is delivered and then you can buy the shares, prices move. If your intention is that you want to buy the same thing, well, then it makes the most sense to just reinvest those dividends directly. But if you need income, right, if you need cash, if you want the flexibility to invest it in a different name, if you expect the stock is maybe a little bit too high in your portfolio in terms of weighting, well, then you'd want to take cash. The reality is, though, no matter what you do, tax is the same in terms of tax treatment, right? Dividends are taxed the year you receive them. Reinvesting doesn't defer those taxes, unless, of course, it's in a tax-advantaged account. So I guess the answer is it depends what you want to do with it. Just at a quick one, quick high level again. If you want to invest it somewhere else, you need the cash, take the cash. If you're going to reinvest it in the name, just reinvest it using the dividend reinvestment program. You may even get a little bit of a discount. Thanks for the call. All right, let's move on to our next YouTube comment section question. We already answered one of those, so really excited to answer another. And it's on ticker AXP, which is American Express Company. It says, hello, InvestTalk. Wanted to know your thoughts on American Express. American Express is one of the preeminent credit card issuers and card network businesses. They have savings accounts, they have CDs, they have premium travel credit cards, but they are intertwined very directly within the payment clearing system within the United States. It's a pretty big company, $207 billion. It's up 52% over the past it's up 28.82% over the past 52 weeks. Incredibly impressive run. It's outperformed its industry in 2024 by 22.8%. Albeit this year, well, it's down a bit, down about 70 basis points on the back of falling revenue. $74.188 billion was the revenue last year. $71.565 is revenue this year. Same time margins, evening out a little bit, up 13.6%. Percent is where they were last year, up to about 14.9% this year. But cash flow is falling, right? You're seeing cash flow fall pretty consistently since the beginning of 2024. Relative strength has started to fall as well, and valuations are a bit stretched even at these levels, right? The high was about 21.7 times forward-looking earnings going back the past 5 years. Creeping back down a bit to 17.9, but still decent chunk over its averages over the past 5 years. What about debt? About $59 billion in debt. They do pay a solid dividend, 1.11%, and they have repurchased shares. I would say, you know, overall, there are some shakers and movers that are potentially set to change the industry. You have the introduction of stablecoin legislation that may change the way that card or that payment processing works. I'll be a little bit more skeptical about that. I'm also a little bit concerned about the race to the top in terms of the pricing of their premium credit cards from both American Express and Chase. But either way, I think within the industry, you're going to see a bit of threats from new entrants in the coming years. And so if I was going to allocate primarily to payment processor, or rather primarily to financial services names, I don't know if this specific credit card issuer, this specific card network provider would be the way to go. That is American Express, ticker AXP. Alrighty, this is InvestTalk. I'm Luke Guerrero. We have one goal here: to help you achieve your financial freedom. Our work continues after this break, our final break. So if you want to get your question in now before we head off for the night, give me a call at 888-99-CHART. And don't forget to cruise over to the new InvestTalk store. It's open now at investtalkstore.com.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
In traditional economic theory, there is a concept of expected return. And that's not the returns that you expect for owning something, but it's rather the expected return for taking on a given level of risk. And so higher risk should equal higher returns. But real-world evidence often contradicts this, especially over long time spans. One of those examples is right now, right? Stock markets are hitting highs despite growing macro risks, such as geopolitical tensions and massive government debt. And so research firm Arno and Macquarie challenges the equity risk premium, showing that U.S. stocks underperform bonds for long stretches between 1804 and 1999. Now, looking at this research, right, most of the long-term equity outperformance came from 1950 to about 1999, a period that may have been anomalous rather than representative. Within the standard understanding of risk, right, standard portfolio theory, you assume this bell curve distribution. But in reality, stock returns are far more volatile and far more skewed. Investors don't fear risk, or in this case, let's call it variance, right? Variance is the measure of risk. They fear losses, meaning they fear the downside variance, semi-variance, if you will, making it more relevant to the total risk picture. And so the idea is to, rather than think about risk to explain returns, think about downside risk, think about fear. One of those fears is fear of missing out. It drives prices higher, especially for speculative assets. Think of meme stocks. Think of crypto. Stocks with high upside potential. Now, the authors of these report propose a new framework. Markets are driven by two competing fears: fear of loss and fear of missing out. This fear-based model may better explain irrational investor behavior like chasing overpriced assets or avoiding sound investments after losses. Either way, just an interesting thing to think about. Certainly more research will need to be done. But that's the difficulty of models, of explaining returns, explaining anything in a world where frictions exist. Now, the last thing I want to talk about is the de minimis exemption, which ends on August 29th. Shipments under $800 will no longer be tariff-free, affecting both customers and small businesses. Tariffs could now range from 10 to 50%, depending on the product and origin country, especially impacting imports from China and Hong Kong. E-commerce companies like Etsy and Temu are especially vulnerable, as many sellers rely on tariff-free border cross shipping, or rather cross-border shipping. Etsy said 25% of its gross merchandise volume involves international transactions. Because of that, you saw the stock drop about 6% following the announcement of the end of the exemption. U.S. shoppers rushing to buy specialty foreign goods, including Japanese pens, Korean inks, before these prices start to rise. The change may cause price hikes at both online platforms and traditional retailers like Walmart and Best Buy and Amazon. Small businesses are warning of the potential of collapse, citing thin margins and rising compliance costs. Canadian seller Oak and Willow called the policy shift a bit life-altering, with half of its customer base in the U.S. and no room to absorb new tariffs. The administration says closing the loophole helps U.S. workers in manufacturing, but critics argue it could disproportionately hurt these smaller sellers and niche customers, as larger corporations can certainly adjust to changing supply chains better than mom-and-pop shops. Some worry about broader inflationary effects, especially on the hard-to-source niche goods. And so, as this starts to end, it'll be interesting to see the effect it has not only on consumers, but small businesses, and how rising costs may ultimately impact a decision the Fed has in front of it over the next couple months, deciding whether or not to bring short-term borrowing costs down. Alrighty, that about does it for another episode of Invest Talk. We have one more episode left to go in this week, and it certainly feels like 2026 is right around the corner. But you don't have to wait until the end of the year to discover if you're in a good place financially. So if anything from today's show has made you think about your financial circumstances, your taxes, your retirement, your investments, and whether it's all working together, we would love to talk with you. At KPP Financial, we offer no-cost portfolio reviews to help bring clarity and confidence to our listeners. Just go to investtalk.com and click on the portfolio review button. It is a free and confidential service. Well, we thank you for joining us one more time. Thank you for listening. We encourage you to tell your friends and family members about our free podcast downloads. You can get yours at iTunes or Spotify and watch our latest videos of our podcast as well as our made for YouTube content over at our YouTube channel, Invest Talk with Two T's. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. Good night.
Invest Talk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.